if they're taking their time to actually wait to have a conversation with me about real estate, they must be intrigued or interested or believe that I have some expertise that will offer them some value.
Hello, and welcome to episode 144 of the Smart Agents Podcast. As always, my name is Michael Walter, and I'll be your host. In today's episode, we are joined by San Francisco Bay Area broker, Milana Ostroy. With more than 20 years of experience, Milana has been through countless market shifts and found success every step of the way. Relying on face-to-face interaction and an ability to problem solve for her clients, she has been a force in the luxury market. Throughout our conversation, Milana shares how she positioned herself for early success, explains why the number one attribute an agent needs is faith in the market, and describes how she has adapted to new technology as it's emerged. But before we get on to the day's featured interview, make sure to subscribe to the Smart Agents Podcast. You can find the show on all major podcasting platforms such as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and now Amazon Music. Also, if you or someone else on your team has an incredible story or a tip to share with our community, send us a message of feedback at smartagents.com. We're always on the lookout for new stories to share. All right, let's get on to the day's featured interview with Milana Ostroy. If you're interested in seeing more from her, I've included links to her YouTube channel and Instagram profile in the episode description. Really, the way I like to start everything out is if you could just introduce yourself to us a little bit, who you are and where you're at in the country.
So my name is Milana Ostroy. I'm a real estate broker for the last 20 plus years in the Bay Area. Primarily, I focus on the San Francisco and the Peninsula market. I grew up in San Francisco, and when I became an adult and had my children, I moved out to the Peninsula. So both areas are considered my home. And that's why I kind of specialize. And a lot of people in the Bay Area move between the cities, from San Francisco to outside San Francisco, suburbia. And I love what I do. I do mostly residential. I do some commercial. And I do a lot of also investment properties for people who want to own properties in the Bay Area and build wealth.
Right. Absolutely. What was it that made you want to get into real estate, you know, back then?
So the honest answer is actually, I didn't want to do real estate. So I got into real estate totally by accident. I actually grew up, my mother was a real estate agent. She was known as the Queen of Diamond Heights in San Francisco. Diamond Heights is this enclave neighborhood that attracted a lot of people. It was in like the Sunset area, which is known for fog, but it always gets sunshine and it has gorgeous city views. So she was known as the Queen of Diamond Heights. I would always tell her that real estate doesn't pay enough. And, you know, she makes $3 an hour and she's too emotional and I would never do real estate. I was going to grow up and be a CEO. Very early on, I started my own company. I had employees. My business partner and I at that time, we parted not on good terms. And I was very depressed and kind of lost where to go in life. And my mother invited me to a seminar by Lorna Hines. Have you heard of Lorna?
Yeah.
So Lorna Hines is probably, obviously paired with my mother, is the inspiration behind me entering real estate. So I went to her seminar and, you know, I just sat in the room and listened. And I was like, these realtors think real estate is hard. They should do VC funding or run a company or like, you know, and I was just like, you know what? I don't know where I'm going, but I already had a mortgage. I already had, you know, bills. I had been financially independent since 17 years old. So I said, you know what? I'm going to get my real estate license and I'll do real estate until I figure out my next company. That was my mindset. So I went and got my license. And I'll never forget it. I got my license on a Monday. Is when I got, you know, the notice from the DRE and hung it with, at that time, Remax. And the reason I chose Remax is because I didn't want to split commission and Remax allowed you to pay rent. So I paid a $6,000 a month rent instead of splitting my commission. But by Friday, I was already in my first contract. And my mom and I had a big fallout because she was of the mindset that how could I commit to paying $6,000 a month desk fee when I have no income? I mean, she's like, it'll probably take you a year to get your first sale. And I told her, well, I better do it really quick. Again, Lorna was my inspiration because if you know her story, she was homeless when she started. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, well, if she could do it, I could do it. So I did. I sold my first house on the buy side. It was a small townhome in the city of San Jose. To be honest, I never been to San Jose, but you know, and also I never used the lockbox. That was the best part. It's like the first time they give you this box, you know, now we use our phones, but back then there was a box and you had to figure out how to use it. And I was in, and we didn't have navigation. So I did Yahoo Maps and I was in a city I didn't know, in a complex I've never been to. And I don't know if, you know, I think a lot of realtors struggle with the big complexes is finding the actual unit in the complex. So I had a lot of struggles on my first one. It was quite the learning curve, but I got it done. I got it done quick because prior to me getting the license, I was already letting everyone know I'm a realtor. Mm-hmm. And right. Somebody that I spoke with, I said, oh, when you're ready to buy, definitely you should call me. I'd be happy to help you. And that was like a month before my license actually came through. And then it happened to be that the week that it came through, he called me and I closed him by Friday.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was my first sale.
Yeah, I really like that idea. I don't have too many people telling me that, you know, they were really marketing themselves as an agent and as a real estate professional while they were in the process of getting that license. And I think that really does set you up for, you know, kind of a head start on everything.
Well, I was coming from more of a corporate world where, and I was really young, right? I was 21 or 22 at the time. So I had been used to, first of all, trying to look older. Secondly, doing the, you know, walk the walk and talk the talk and then figure it out when someone gives you the opportunity. So that's what I did, is I walked the walk. I did the talk. I was confident upon my delivery. And that is when I asked him why he chose to work with me. He said, because you sounded like you knew what you were talking about. So I do believe in that.
Yeah. Yeah. How, I mean, so at 21 and even before then, when you were building your other company, what was it inside you that, you know, gave you that confidence to be able to, you know, get beyond, you know, what so many people struggle with is that imposter syndrome and really kind of, you know, take things on by the horn?
So you would have to go back to my childhood. I grew up with immigrant parents. I was first generation American. So I saw my parents struggle. They worked multiple jobs. You know, we were very poor initially, and I saw them make their way to middle class. And that fire and that drive was just in me from the beginning because I watched them struggle. And, you know, I had to create opportunities for myself from a young age, right? Like at 9 years old, I started making flyers for babysitting services. By 14, I had a full-on tutoring company. I would tutor kids after school, and I'd have to market myself even before I ever tutored, right? So I was kind of used to, I would believe in myself. My father was, and actually both my parents were really great about instilling confidence and making me believe that I can be anybody, I can do anything. And I think that really carried through in my life, in that lack of imposter syndrome. And I also take the time to learn things. So if I don't know something, I don't pretend to know something. I will let people know that I'll find out, or I'll put time into becoming more educated and then share the information. So that's also was a big influence on me was Socrates, because Socrates said the wisest person isn't going to tell you they know everything. They'll just let you know what they don't know. And I really do apply that. So when I speak with confidence because I only talk about what I know. And if I don't know something, I'm not afraid to ask or to go find out.
Great. Excellent. So as you were, you know, you got that first deal within a week, how did things kind of progress and what were you doing to continue to get your name out there and to kind of start building that, that groundswell of your business?
So when I started in Burlingame, California, and it's a very luxury market. Burlingame and Hillsborough are considered really high-end markets. And I wanted to get into high-end. So the first thing I did is I wanted to create a brand. So as soon as I got into real estate, I created a logo. I did branding, which a lot of realtors at that time, branding wasn't a big thing except right. for your picture. I wasn't big on having my picture on things, but I was big on logo branding, colors, et cetera. So what I did is back then there was a magazine called Distinctive Homes, which was competing with Real Estate Times or Homes and Land, you guys might know. And I took the back cover for a year and marketed there for a year. And it propelled me into the luxury market right away. So my first listing was $5 million at that time. But I did it not only through the branding, I did do door knocking and I offered my services for free with no commitment. So I offered to show the house without taking a listing agreement, which is what got the seller to trust me after a few weeks. And then he actually asked me to do the listing.
Yeah. Right. I really think that's interesting about, you know, building your brand back then, because I do feel like that is something that is maybe more, you know, thought about in the last, you know, 5, 6, 7 years. You know, like you just feel like every, especially for newer agents coming on, I think they understand that you can't necessarily just have the brokerage logo and that be your marketing behind you. You have to create your own, you know, persona and really your own business within, you know, your singular agent self there. And I think that's really smart that you did that just getting started.
Well, you know, the brokerage, I've never been with a brokerage that built me. And you have to be able to take your business anywhere if you're going to be really valuable, right? So you have to really brand yourself. And, you know, that's all I knew was marketing when I came into the business. That was my forte. It's what I finished my university in, as well as economics. And so that's the first thing that I applied. I had nothing else to do. I had no business. So I had to do marketing. But also, you know, when you're fresh in the business, you're more willing to do things that other people are not, like door knocking, like offering your services without creating a contractual agreement. And, you know, because I had to earn the trust and confidence, but that listing then propelled me right into other luxury listings. And I was able to, you know, build business off of that.
Right. So what were you doing to, you know, once you got that initial listing to really kind of, you know, build up that reputation and something that person was able to refer that really kind of is like, this is what she did that set herself apart.
So the first thing I did, because you remember we didn't have apps. We didn't have the technology we had today. So people were not as online, right? We relied on print newspaper. But the one thing I believed in was face-to-face contact. So what I did is I religiously held open house. Yeah. Saturdays, Sundays, twilight tours, Tuesday broker tours. And it took me a while to sell the house. And I worked through the holidays. So a lot of agents take off during the holidays. I usually choose to work during the holidays because it sets me up for business the following year. And I knew that if people would speak with me, they would feel confident in working with me. I was unable to translate that through print. So I just really focused on doing as many open houses, even if they were not my listings, as possible back then.
Right. Absolutely. And I think, you know, just for those particular, you know, those higher end listings, by having those open houses, you're going to get people that are just interested and curious to see the home, and you're getting that face time with them anyway. I think that's great, you know, just to bring in more foot traffic.
Yes. And then the other thing is I implemented Lorna's strategies in there. So Lorna Hines, who was my inspiration in getting into real estate, she would let me know, don't ever do flyers, which was really anti what the industry taught you. So to this date, I don't do flyers. But it forces people to talk to me. And while, yes, you know, people say, oh, maybe they get upset. The way you, overall, I would say 99% do not get upset with me because I make a joke out of it. I sell value to it. But what was happening is that the open houses, people would actually wait in line to speak with me. And at that point, I realized I was going to gain market share because if they're taking their time to actually wait to have a conversation with me about real estate, they must be intrigued or interested or believe that I have some expertise that will offer them some value. And that's when I realized the power of what Lorna's strategy really was about not having a flyer. Because when you give a flyer, you lose a lot of opportunity to speak with a person and to what I call problem solve, because there is no perfect house. The house might sell itself, but most houses take a sale. There's always something wrong with the house. If there's nothing wrong with the house, you probably can't afford it, right? Like that's how I knew. My job when I'm at open house in selling the property is to resolve the problems that buyers see in the property in order for them to see themselves living there.
Right. Absolutely. Is that something that, you know, having that ability to solve those problems on the fly, you know, when you're meeting somebody for the first time in an open house, you know, you might be hit with this question that you kind of have to dance around a little bit. How much did that, you know, practicing and just getting comfortable with that on the fly, unscripted type, interactions?
So actually, I was really comfortable because I did it myself. So what happened was when I was in University of San Francisco, my parents bought me a condo, but they let me, you know, go through the real estate process. Okay. And I was in love with a condo that was all done, fully remodeled, 2-bedroom, 2-bath. The same builder did a condo that was 3-bedroom, 2-bath, but no one had renovated it. So it wasn't as attracted to me. And I did what all the other buyers out there did, which is they didn't have imagination. So they went for what was a prettier picture, but it was a worse financial decision. So that experience really taught me that one, people don't have imagination, and it's hard for people to imagine themselves living there if it's not picture perfect in their eyes. But also, when my mom took me through the process of imagining, right? So the place that we ended up buying, the 3-bedroom, 2-bath, had green carpets, yellow walls, and a brick fireplace. And the kitchen was like this tiny galley kitchen. I mean, I just couldn't. I was like, there's no way I could live here. But it was a much better place. So she's like, close your eyes, imagine a marble fireplace, imagine hardwood floors. And you know, it really did wonders on me because I went through that experience. I could relate to what was happening with buyers coming in and looking at other houses. So I was able to communicate fairly quickly. I know a lot of people need work on that. So I'm a big proponent when I train team members, for example, I teach them not scenarios. I teach them dialogue, very similar to Lorna's style dialogue. And then I tell them to role play with their kids, their wives and husbands, because those are the best. It's always the hardest. And practice making the dialogue your own, because I can give you a script, but if you sound like a robot delivering it, you're not going to earn the confidence and trust that people need in you to buy or sell real estate.
Right. Absolutely. I think scripts are good, you know, for that, just kind of like that guideline, kind of get you in the direction, but you really got to be able to pivot and move with, the little nuances that come up.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, getting the career started and really, you know, honing in on these different styles to create that more face-to-face connection. Obviously San Francisco and that area is very competitive market. What's it been like, you know, over the course of your career with seeing, you know, so many different ups and downs in the markets and obviously COVID happening. And that was totally different than anybody could have ever, predicted. But you know, what's it been like, just kind of going through your career, in that market?
I mean, we've definitely been through some roller coasters, not just through the recessions, I think, of what was it? We had a mini one in 04, 05. Then we had the big one, 07, 08. Then we had COVID where things came to a halt, then things, you know, skyrocketed. And then this year it was, you know, crickets from October to February. And then now we're back to multiple offer. It's an interesting time. I think that first of all, as a real estate agent, you have to become a owner or investor in real estate somehow, some way, so that you can understand the experience that buyers and sellers are going through. You need to have a faith in real estate, because if you don't, you can't sell it in the downtimes. And there will be downtimes. It's impossible for everything to just go up and up and up. You have to be able to explain that over long term, this is not a short term play, that real estate will go up and that prices will go up, and that really it's not about interest rates or prices. It's about your payment. See, people forget in the process of real estate, they pay so much attention to purchase price that that's not what's affecting their life daily. It's actually the mortgage payment that affects their life daily. And so, you know, I always am able to refocus buyers and sellers on what it is they want to accomplish with the sale, whether it's something that they want to live in, or it's a investment property, or it's a, you know, 5-year plan or a 10-year plan. And I plan them for worst case scenario. So my worst case scenario is always like, you guys need to keep this property for at least 5 years. If it skyrockets beforehand and you want to cash out, fine. But if you plan on 5 years, I have faith that the market, when you call me, I'm going to be able to sell it for a profit. So you got to have that faith in yourself and in the market. And you need to have the experience to be able to refocus them on where they want to go versus what they're doing or experiencing right now. And also focus them, if they're on the buy side, for example, focus them on mortgage payment, structuring the financing, which a lot of realtors don't involve themselves in, but I do, because I think that is what makes or breaks the deal. And if you look at how investors look at deals when you work with them, it's all about numbers. So if you learn to structure financing better and focus them on that rather than the $50,000 more they need to offer in a purchase price in order to get the property, right? That's where the difference is. So for example, today at a 6% mortgage, $50,000 means a $300 mortgage payment difference. $300 is what people spend when they go out for dinner these days. You know, so maybe you go out to dinner twice less, but you get the house that you want and you're not overbid by $50,000. $50,000 for a $500,000 property, that's going to make a huge difference. But if it's the Bay Area and San Francisco, you know, entry level is well above 1.5 now, right? So at that price, 50,000 isn't going to make a difference. And so, you know, I try to just really put it into perspective to people so that they can make good financial decisions. I'm not a one that says, oh, you have to do this or you don't have to do this. But I do like to offer different perspectives and worst case scenarios so that they can make the best decision for themselves. And I think by doing that, they feel empowered and educated where they understand their decision.
Right. I really like that. You know, rather than thinking about the big number, is really kind of breaking it down and saying like, okay, if we were to move up to this price, this would be roughly what the monthly would be. How are you able to work with that? How's that fit within your daily monthly budget, rather than thinking of something so big? And, you know, I mean, really, how many people actually stay within that house? If it's a 30-year mortgage, I mean, really, how many people are actually staying in that? And
exactly. Although right now, I think what we have is an America full of mortgage prisoners because of the, yeah, you know, the record low, basically free money interest rates mm-hmm. that they got. They're not making great decisions for, let's say, quality of life or other things, because they're like, oh, they're so focused on the interest rates. But unless you're planning on paying that loan for the next 30 years, It shouldn't be your main decision make. It should be a part of the decision making, but not the main one.
Right. Absolutely. As the, you know, the markets have changed, and obviously the technology has changed a huge ton. I mean, we talked about it. You printed out the Yahoo Maps and all those kind of things. I remember, you know, driving to college. I had the little maps put on my dashboard to get there and all that good stuff. But what, how have you adapted your business and your marketing as different technologies and different, you know, kind of trends and things have come up?
So I will say that I was a real estate dinosaur for a while, in the sense that I was refusing to move with the times because I didn't see the value. But if you go back to the basic foundation of what I said in the beginning, face-to-face contact is your primary source of earning someone's trust and confidence. Finally, in 2020, I came to life on social media. And I decided that I got to move with the times. It was a really rough change for me to be putting myself out there. So right now I do a lot of educational reels and videos. I'm on Instagram. I'm on TikTok. I'm on YouTube. I'm a little bit on LinkedIn. So I would say primarily Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. But I put out a lot of videos because I need to get out this information so that people can make good decisions for themselves. And if they feel that I am presenting something valuable, they'll reach out. And so, you know, like I just signed two listings last night and I said, hey, by the way, you know, we were talking about the grand macroeconomics of what's happening and what's going to happen so they can make good real estate decisions for the next 5 years. And I said, you know, I also talk about this on my Instagram or YouTube, if you're online at all. And the husband goes, oh, I've been following you. You're amazing. You know, and so it's like I won the listing before I got to the listing, but I didn't know. I didn't know they follow me. I didn't know that they even knew who I was. Right. So it does work. And what I'm doing is, you know, I'm trying to provide who I am, what I stand for, what I know to the public, which is a daunting task. I mean, you're putting yourself out there for critique. So you just kind of got to get over the, you know, what do I look like? What do I sound like thing? And just try to deliver the way you would deliver in person and hope that you could create a tribe, a following of people who, when they do have real estate needs, that they would reach out to you.
Right. Absolutely. I think, you know, it's really important when doing the educational videos and those kind of things is don't get so caught up in the amount of views that things have, because it really only takes that one person to see you, and you are building that, you know, you're building that trust and rapport without ever having a communicate, you know, communication with them, to where when you do have that first face-to-face interaction, they already know you. It's so much of a warmer, you know, interaction.
It's true. And, you know, it's a struggle, especially in the beginning, because you're like, oh my God, nobody's liking me. Nobody's viewing me. But it's not. I think that if we just change our mindset to nobody, let me rephrase it. If we change our mindset from a rejection mindset to the fact that these platforms have their own algorithms, and we, especially when we start, we don't get widespread viewership because of the algorithm. So it's not that people reject you. It's that the algorithm doesn't carry you out until you become really consistent. And even then, you know, if you're trying to always adapt to the algorithm, good luck. I haven't figured it out. You know, some of my videos, like the last video I posted got 6,000 views or 7,000 views. The one before that got 400 views.
Right.
I am no tech person. I don't try for that, but I do market that I'm on Instagram. I do market that I'm on YouTube. You know, on my listing signs, for example, I'll put my Instagram, because I feel like if you want to know who I am, go watch me speak. Watch some of my videos. See if you feel comfortable in me representing and negotiating on your behalf.
Right. Absolutely. And I think that that's a really important you know, way to think about it too, is that when you have, you know, a listing out there and somebody sees your name and maybe they've, you know, haven't ever checked out, you know, your stuff before, and they do go to your Instagram, they see all of that stuff that you're already providing. And that just helps build up that authority that they didn't know that you had, you know, without meeting you.
Exactly. So that's the way I have adapted to technology. I know it's big chatter in the industry about adapting all the AI tech. I haven't figured that out yet. I don't know. There's something to be said about authenticity. I'm a very authentic person. I kind of what you see is what you get. If you ask me anything, real estate, finance, investing, I will give you a ton of advice. If it's something about cooking in the kitchen, I will just let you know I don't cook, you know. So, I feel like I'm sure the AI can be really well leveraged. It's just not something that I've figured out. And I'm just trying to stay consistent on the platforms that I did choose to go on, just to put myself out there for the exact reason that you talked about is, if you see my name and you want to know who I am and you Google me, you'll see that I'm on all these platforms. But more important, you're not going to see pictures. You're going to see videos. You'll be able to hear me speak and then make a determination of what you feel about my expertise and experience.
Right. Absolutely. And I think that's so much better. You know, even, you know, you see so many agent pages out there that when you go to them, that it's all the listing photos. And that's fantastic. Like, you're showing your successes, but you're not showing your expertise by doing that. And I think with what you're doing, you are, you know, really helping out, you know, your client base, whether or not they're, you know, they are your clients or not.
Yeah, I have a lot of, I sell a lot of listings, and the buyers who come in, you know, they're working with their agents, but they say, hey, we follow you on Instagram. We really like your stuff, you know, so that's nice to know. It's not just my mom and my sister who, that every time I record, I'm like, it's just my mom and my sister who watch me. but yeah, it's nice to know. And I just believe that if you deliver value to people, people will come to you.
Right. Absolutely. Well, obviously it's been working for you, you know, with all these years and success that you've been having. I really do appreciate you taking the time to talk with us today.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. And I'm happy to share what I've done. And, you know, I want to see a lot of my fellow real estate agents succeed. We are all in this together. It's a big pie.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, again, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you, Michael. I appreciate it.
I really want to thank Milana for joining us today and can see why she's had such a successful career. Remember, if you're interested in seeing more from her, I've included links to her YouTube channel and Instagram profile in the episode description. So once again, if you think you or someone else on your team has an incredible story or tip to share with our community, send us a message at feedback@smartagents.com. Well, that wraps things up for this episode, but remember, follow the show wherever you listen to podcasts and make sure to subscribe to the Smart Agents YouTube channel. Again, I'm Michael Walter, and we'll see you on the next episode.